Hi, I'm gonna ultimate Liliana. Would you like pile one or pile two? Kira!
Hi, I'm a 4-mana 1/1 that wins the game. Maya!
And welcome back!
Welcome back!
This is a continuation of our previous episode where we break down the fundamentals of deck archetypes.
And today, we're talking about the last two core strategies.
The final two.
The final two decks. Let's not get DMCA struck. The first one is, of course, control, and the second one is mid-range. And we'll talk a little bit about a deck archetype I call aliens, which only sort of exists, but fundamentally today we're going to be talking about control and mid-range decks. And this is something that you have a little bit more familiarity with than tempo decks. So Kira, take us through the control strategy.
Thankfully, control does what it says on the tin. Control is looking to control the game. This is your quintessential answers deck. It is often but not always reactive. And we discussed proactive decks in the previous episode. Decks that are looking to put threats onto the board, turn things sideways, and swing. Reactive decks, like control, are looking to wait for questions to answer. Control is your answers deck. If tempo and combo and aggro are asking you questions, control is looking to answer them, either through mitigating strategies, through literal counter spells and preventing the question from being asked, or through other formative and manipulative, as I would say, effects similar to Sunfall and Temporary Lockdown.
The decks are fundamentally designed to control the pace of the game and slow it down, which allows their big late game threats to win for them kind of automatically.
If aggro is looking to go fast, control is looking to stop that and say, we are not playing fast, we're playing at my pace. Control is looking to dictate and take charge and control the flow of the game.
The longer the game goes, typically the better the game is for a control deck.
This is the deck that you would also typically associate with removal, counterspell, card draw. Removal, counterspell, card draw. The difference between tap-out control decks and reactive control decks would be something like your Azorius control versus mono-white caretaker token control. Azorius control is not looking to tap out. It is looking to represent answers to questions at all points. It is looking to leave up counterspells or bluff counterspells or represent those counterspell threats at any given point. Caretaker control, mono white tokens, is looking to throw its threats out and to create a board state that is overwhelming that aggro typically cannot get through.
A lot of the gameplay patterns of control decks is focused on matching your answers to your opponent's threats well enough to win through card advantage. Kind of uniquely, this strategy doesn't actually pair very well with many other archetypes. So a pure control deck is something like the old familiar Azorius control.
All faithful.
All faithful. Whether it be Ivanflok's Quicken Supreme Verdict Sphinx's Revelation deck, or today's slightly different stock up, no more lies, get lost style of decks. This is the color combo and the style of deck that you historically associate with the idea of quote-unquote control.
This was the, up until recently, Wandering Emperor deck.
The Wandering Emperor registered trademark, Teferi, Hero of Dominaria, grind you out, draw a bunch of cards, answer your threats, gain some life. Oh no, you lost to my Planeswalker.
Nothing but blue-white.
Nothing but blue-white. Control mid-range decks do sort of exist. These are decks like Caretaker Control in Standard, or the old Modern Goblins list, your Jim Davis special. These are decks that are, while definitely control decks, while they are looking to grind you out of the game with late game threats, they are doing so in a manner that is more akin to mid-range, with individual card quality being higher and being able to answer a wider variety of threats than necessarily just slowing down the game until your opponent loses. So for context, the Modern Goblins list was playing three copies of Goblin Piledriver, which is not something that you would associate with a control deck, despite it very much being a control deck. In terms of control combo decks, we have something like Blue-Black Narset Control in Pioneer. And this is delineating from the Blue-Red Creativity list we were talking about, in the sense that its primary game plan is to control the game, to kill you with big threats, but it just also has this alternative win condition of casting Narset and then a draw seven to draw a bunch of cards and force you down to one card, or using Narset and a card called Grya Reach Sanitarium, which causes your opponent to draw and discard in order to prevent your opponent functionally from drawing any more cards. So how this combo works is Narset says you cannot draw more than one card a turn.
Your opponent cannot draw more than one card a turn.
And Grya Reach Sanitarium is a land with an activated ability that says each player draws a card and then discards a card. So if you activate Grya Reach Sanitarium in your opponent's upkeep before they draw a card for turn, they draw a card and then discard a card, and Narset prevents them from drawing a card for their turn. So if they have no cards in hand, they are locked out from playing the rest of the game, essentially. Because instead of drawing a card, they mill a card.
I love Narset.
It's very, very silly. Control Tempo doesn't really exist. And we spoke about this in the previous episode where we talk about tempo decks. But the reason why this doesn't really exist is because controlling cards and tempo cards are uniquely at odds in the way they work. Because tempo cards will typically only be good in the early game and only supporting aggressive strategies and assertive strategies, whereas control decks are looking to be reactive. The closest thing, I think, to it ever having existed was Shahar Shenhar's Jeskai control list from the 2013 World Championships. And the reason that this is true is because back in the day, we did not have a lot of good removal, so we were playing Lightning Bolt and Lightning Helix and Snapcaster Mage, and our best answers, our best counterspells were Mana Leak and Remand. Counterspell was banned in Modern. I don't think it was banned. It just had never been printed into Modern. So the card that kind of pushed it into a tempo deck, or into having the option for a tempo strategy, was the fact that it was playing several copies of Vendilion Click, which is a 3-mana, 3/1 flyer with flash, and it does some other irrelevant stuff. These decks so seldomly exist. But when they do, they're a lot of fun. I think this is a combination of archetype that you will very seldomly have to worry about in a standard setting going.
The reason being as well is because you can't be proactive and reactive at the same time. And I think a good delineation between these things is proactive is looking to tap out. Reactive is looking to hold mana up. And you can't do both of those things at the same time, really, depending on the strategy you're looking to execute.
You definitely can. The idea being like a flash deck, like Jeskai Flash.
Sure.
But often these decks necessarily have to be controlling because flash is such a strong keyword mechanic. The cards will be worse on rate than a creature without flash. And so in terms of an aggressive, assertive strategy, we would rather be playing at sorcery speed because the options you have access to are so much stronger. Control aggro doesn't really exist. It just doesn't really. And we said this in the aggro portion of last episode as well. Feel free to write in if you can think of a really good like control aggro or aggro control deck from Standard's history. I would love to know because it would be a really interesting teaching moment for me. I'm convinced it doesn't exist.
If you can make one right now, I will play it on Arena.
You can make a competitive one now, I will also.
Yes, if
do
you
that.
Can if you sorry. Let's clear it. If you can make a competitive control aggro or aggro control deck, I will play it.
Counterburn is a lot of newer players' favorite ideas of an archetype. But unfortunately, you often get very disillusioned very quickly because the archetype just isn't good because it's trying to do two separate things that are kind of at odds with each other.
Midrange!
Anything you can do, I can do slightly worse, but all at the same time.
Love that.
Yeah.
It's so accurate.
Midrange is the ultimate one-for-one deck.
Mid-range decks are looking to win through an advantage in card quality rather than card quantity. Mid-range decks are going to try to force you to play at a fair game plan on their terms and then beat you in a top deck war. They are controlling enough to beat aggro strategies, disruptive enough to beat combo strategies, efficient enough to beat tempo strategies, and fast enough to beat controlling strategies sometimes. The coin flip is important.
Mid-range decks in any given format are often called, and here's a little bit more Magic history for you folks, are often called the rock. And this is from the famous quote, rock beats everything.
Mid-range decks tend to have much less swingy matchups. We talked about tempo being very all or nothing, that big swing back and forth. And mid-range has a lot less of that compared to other archetypes, with win rates typically only varying from 45 to 55% against any given deck. Problematic standard decks notwithstanding. This often tends to be the archetype of choice for pro players, as mid-range tends to be very rewarding to high-skill gameplay. As we've talked about with archetype combinations, mid-range is probably the one you'll see the most being paired up with mid-range aggro, mid-range combo, mid-range tempo, because at some level, most decks can turn into a mid-range deck. A great example of a pure mid-range deck in Standard right now is Golgari mid-range. Black, green, mid-range. This is going to be your classic Deep Cavern Bat, Sentinel of the Nameless City, Preacher of the Schism.
Glissa, Glissa.
This is Glissa, your Glissa deck. Glissa. This is Glissa's favorite deck. Pure mid-range is looking to, as you've said, beat you on card quality. I'm going to make sure that my three drops are better than yours. My three drops are going to do more things and reward me with more things than your three drops. My turn three is going to be a Glissa with First Strike and Death Touch. And your turn three was an Emberheart Challenger. First Strike and Death Touch is very hard for an aggro deck to get through.
Block.
Block. Block, First Strike, Death Touch. Now what?
Go to combat, I block.
Glissa loves blocking. Glissa does also love attacking. I will say, Glissa has abilities that do make her an excellent attacker as well. But Glissa loves blocking against those aggro decks because aggro doesn't like playing defense. And so when you force aggro to play defense in that Golgari midrange, you put yourself in a much better position because on average, your cards are going to be better in the long run. Something that's more of a midrange tempo deck is going to be Dimir midrange. This is going to be your blue-black midrange. This is your Kaito deck. This is your Enduring Curiosity Spyglass Siren deck.
Midrange tempo in particular, we are talking about the like quintessential blue-black midrange deck. Blue, I feel like blue-black bounce is tempo midrange, right? And
true.
It does kind of speak to that really thin delineation between one of the two, because depending on the like exact 75 that you're playing, it could very easily go either way. Are you on four copies of Hopeless Nightmare? Who knows? Are you tempo? Are you midrange?
Dimir midrange, this is also going to be currently the Unholy Annex deck. This is going to be the deck I think that plays Unholy Annex the most, because it is not doing anything else. It's not doing the bounce thing as well.
But Kira, Oars of Pixie.
Look, Unholy Annex is good enough to be played in any deck that plays black. I think Golgari midrange tends to have it in the sideboard for card advantage in games 2 and 3, if necessary.
It's the best Phyrexian Arena.
It is a better Phyrexian Arena. 9 times out of 10... because of the fact that you draw that first card the turn you play it. A mid-range combo deck is going to be your mono black deck right now. This is going to be, as I mentioned in the last episode, this is your Unstoppable Slasher Bloodletter of Akhlazots deck. This is going to be your 2-card, I make you lose all of your life on the spot. This is Bloodletter of Akhlazots plus Rush of Dread. This is Unstoppable Slasher plus Bloodletter of Akhlazots. Mid-range combo is mono black right now. It has all of the pieces necessary to, as early as turn 4, win the game.
The only deck that comes even close to being as quintessentially mid-range combo is the green-black Innkeeper's Raskas decks that we used to see
a long ago.
But I haven't seen that deck in forever.
I haven't seen it in a long time, I think because a lot of players have put Vraska into the sideboard. And because in game one she's in the sideboard, you aren't typically executing that plan. And Vraska is an expensive planeswalker as well. It's just a bit of a mana sink. And you don't really want to draw your Vraska on turn three. You're hoping to draw her on turn seven with a fully leveled up innkeeper's talent to win the game on the spot. And that's a precarious position to put yourself in. That's a difficult position to be in because you can't control what order you draw your cards in. Top decking is a skill, but typically you have no control over the order in which you draw your cards. And so drawing a Vraska early on is almost always going to be worse than drawing pretty much any other card in your deck. Mid-range aggro. This is our Gruul Mice deck, but specifically this is the version with no Leyline. And that is because Leyline leans towards a combo strategy. So your mid-range aggro is going to be the strict red-green mice. This is a very popular archetype, and it has developed a lot in the Pro Tour and post-Pro Tour with the absence of Leyline. It is looking to survive long enough into the late game to eventually overwhelm your opponent with that aggressive strategy, but the mid-range point is important here because it needs to get to the mid-range. If it was aggro mid-range, the point first and foremost is to win. The second point is to last long enough in your mid-range matchups. These are going to be Gruul decks that are playing for copies of Questing Druid to help with your card advantage because, unfortunately, green-red does not have a lot of card draw, does not have a lot of way to generate card draw except through effects like the Emberheart Challenger's Impulse through its Valiant trigger and through Questing Druid. Because these decks also aren't running cards like Thrill of Possibility or Grab the Prize because they are focused on that aggressive slant.
Don't forget about the card advantage from the maps that your opponent gives you from Get Lost.
The best present any mid-range aggro player can get is 2 map tokens.
It's so many map tokens.
Finally, you've got mid-range control, and that is Xur Overlord.
All hail Matnass.
All hail Matnass, our Overlord. Mid-range control through Xur Overlords again. Overlords is a grindy deck. It is looking to play a long game. The longer the game goes on, the better off Overlords is because they can absolutely generate nearly, it feels like, infinite value through Up the Beanstalk plus impending Overlords plus reduced cost on Ride's End plus reduced cost on Leyline Binding. The card quality in Overlords is huge the longer the game goes on. It has that controlling aspect as well because it gets to a point where it is forcing the opponent into playing at their speed and playing their game. You step into an arena with Overlords, you're no longer playing your game. You're playing the Overlord's game. This is largely due to bigger threats in the sideboard. There is going to be usually 1 or 2 copies of Negate in the sideboard. Depending on what the matchup really looks like, there's also going to be Atraxas, there's going to be Nissas. If you're playing Matt Nass's list, you have Elishnorn. The threats are big, they're punchy, and they dominate the board state. Xur Overlords is currently the mid-range control deck and heavy on the mid-range aspect. I find it doesn't lean as much into control until the late game.
The delineation here, at least in my mind, is that Xur Overlords is still looking to beat you on card quality. It's not relying on any individual card to beat you. You could argue that, like, Overlord of the Mistmaws is what it's trying to kill you with. But it's not playing this, like, high density of interaction and counter spells and slowing the game down that way. Instead, it is beating you on my Up the Beanstalk is better than yours and my 3-mana ramp spell is better than yours because it's also a 6/5 and my board wipe is better than yours because it leaves me a creature. It is controlling in its want to go late, but it is really more so than your like pure reactive control deck, just a really, really, really big mid-range deck.
The other thing here that Xur Overlords currently occupies as a niche is not only are the cards by quality better, they draw more cards than you as well. And so they're not just beating you on the card quality front. They are also beating you on the card quantity front. Through stock up, through up the beanstalk, Overlord's players are looking through half of their deck most games. And they are going to be able to put themselves in positions to grab the pieces that they want. There's Analyze the Pollen for a tutor. It is a quality plus quantity equals Xur. I give you a 7/7 with lifelink, death touch, and hexproof.
Mm, nom, 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 nom. Your fist tastes mighty good, Mr. Overlord.
Thank you for this meal, Xur. So we're moving into this last category that you've put down here, which is aliens. Ayo, what is aliens?
This is kind of my honorable mention slot because, strictly speaking, it only kind of exists. It doesn't fit into this heuristic of placing decks into archetype combinations. So they're decks that don't fit into any combination of archetypes that we've described in a way that's useful for us to understand. Often these decks are a combination of three or four of the archetypes melded together in a way that understanding them as any one or two of the archetypes isn't useful for us in understanding how to play against them.
The amalgam, dreaded, aggro combo tempo mid-range deck.
It is definitely like an eldritch horror of a deck most of the time. It's worth noting that there are very few of these, and it is often more of a symptom of eternal formats than standard, but they can happen. My go-to example is the old version of Modern Dredge. So for those who are old and decrepit like me, this was the Life from the Loam conflagrate version of Dredge. It is an aggressively slanted combo deck with a mid-range game plan and a controlling win condition.
Oh my goodness. There's so many keywords.
Yeah. Often, unfortunately, this is where conventional wisdom ends and just learning the deck is the only way to understand how to beat it. These decks also tend to be quite strong. So if you see one, be sure to give it a look because it gets to play into the elements of so many archetypes. It can be very resilient while still having the explosiveness of many of these kind of high power but linear game plans.
That wraps up our deck archetype discussion, part 2 of 2. We look forward to seeing you again next week. New episodes release on Mondays at 11 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. Until then, you can keep track of all of our releases at RaiseMTG on both Instagram and Blue Sky. You can find me on the same platforms at Kira Bobira and Maya at MayaMTG. A big thank you to the State Library of Victoria for the ongoing use of their space. And until next time, remember, what doesn't grow, dies. And what dies, grows the Tarmogoyf.